And a good hot and sunny afternoon to you. You know, I'm sitting here looking at AccuWeather, and it's going to be hot tomorrow, 96 tomorrow. If you look at Monday, Monday's down to 90. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You know, anywhere from 79 to 85. Lows 63, 62. That's some strange weather for the end of July and the 1st of August, you know. But it's a good thing. Deer season starts August 15th, and a little bit of cool weather. Maybe it's time to go down to the hunt club and get a work day in. Think about it. Anyway, if it holds and most forecasts change, it's going to be a good week to get outside. You are listening to Woods and Water South Carolina on 94.5 WGTK. My name is Roger Metz, and I'm back in the studio. Took a short road trip down to Athens, Georgia, Thursday and Friday, to attend the Quality Deer Management Association convention. We'll talk more about that a little later. But you can listen to this show on your FM dial, the free Conservative Talk 94.5 app, or listen to the live streaming feed at conservativetalk945.com. Look on the right side of the page and click the Listen Live link. Let me say something about 94.5 WGTK for a second. You know, we have a 100-mile transmitter here, and that's pretty big for a talk radio show or station. I've tested that signal south, listened to it driving I-77 on the other side of Rock Hill. I'm sorry, that would be east, not south. It's clear down to the Chapin exit on I-26, and now I've tried it as far as Bogart, Georgia, and it came in as clear there too. So, I haven't been north, which means I just need to go trout fishing and figure out how far north I can get it. But if you're looking at in advertising, you know, this station not only reaches people here in the upstate, but far beyond. Take that for what you will. What's on the schedule today? I'm going to talk a little bit, maybe two of the seminars I went to, the QDMA convention, a new organization they launched there on Friday called the National Deer Alliance. And I have an update on the cystic fibrosis low country red trout celebrity classic down in Charleston. But hey, that's just me. If you've got something you want to talk about, or if you hear me talking about something that you have some experience with, give me a call. Those numbers, 235-9405 in the upstate, or 877-235-9405 anywhere else. Now, before I forget, the two most important women in my life have had birthdays this week. My mom celebrated hers on Thursday, and my wife's birthday is tomorrow. Thank goodness this year I didn't get them switched around. I won't tell you how old they are, but if you know either one of them, neither one of them looked their age. Now, I can assure you that's not because of me, either how easy it was for mom to raise me or for my wife to put up with me for the last 22 years. But I wouldn't be where I am today if it weren't for both of them, and that's why you had to endure these last few minutes. That maybe, as any guy knows, there's some brownie points out there I can cash in this fall. Let's get to the calendar of events for this week, and if you want to go trout fishing, DNR is still dumping trout in the rivers, the Little East Otoe, Canebrake, Rocky Bottom, North and Middle Saluda, Chog, and the Lake Hartwell Tailwaters. Now, I came across the Lake Hartwell Tailwaters yesterday afternoon, and it just looked like it needed to be fished. So maybe instead of going north, I'll go down there. I tried that a long time ago with a buddy of mine, and I don't think they were stocking much back then. We didn't have any success, so we figured, no, the mountains are a place to go. But that might be a place to go try now. Anyway, they stocked 4,825 trout. This trout stocking report you can find at the DNR website. It'll get you updated information every Friday afternoon. So check that out. If you want to go trout fishing any one of those waters, there are fish there for you to catch. August the 2nd, I've said this, we've talked about this one before. This is the South Carolina Wildlife Federation's Wild Summer's Night Auction and Wild Game Feast. Wild game, wild items, and wild times. Works of art, jewelry, birding, wildlife trips, hunting, fishing excursions, both in South Carolina and other places. It's a nonprofit organization, and this one auction provides 15% to 20% of their operating budget for the year. Registration is at 6, you know, 8 for the auction. It even says attire is business casuals. Tickets are $75. You can go to the South Carolina Wildlife Federation website, get more information. The location is Seawells Catering, 1125 Rosewood Drive in Columbia. sensational fun. If you're going to be down at Edisto Beach, then go up the street, walk to the Edisto Beach State Park, and find out what's swimming with you in the surf zone. Now, you may or may not want to know, but they're going to be dragging on August the 5th from 9:30 to 10:30. They're going to be dragging a seine through the breakers, and that's a good thing. Teach kids what's out there when they're swimming. Now, you're not going to come up with any 5 or 6 foot sharks, I'm sure. But it's an interesting thing to see exactly what lives, all the small fish and that sort of thing. If you're going to be down at Edisto Beach, check it out. Ducks Unlimited. Now, I got this as kind of an email. It's not a banquet, but it's a DU recruitment meeting. Wednesday, August the 6th at 6:30, right over here at the Blockhouse Restaurant on Augusta Road. Says, do you want to learn more about Ducks Unlimited and the work they do in South Carolina? Are you looking to volunteer at the local level for Ducks Unlimited in Greenville? And the contact is Worth Hathaway. That's GreenvilleDucksUnlimited@gmail.com. They do want an RSVP. So if you didn't get this email, but you want to become involved in the DU chapter here in Greenville, this event for you, it starts at 6:30. That's August 6th over at the Blockhouse. And August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and we talked about peaches here, and we've talked about barbecue here, and those 3 days, we're going to have the 33rd annual South Carolina Pillion Peanut Party. It used to be the Pillion Peanut Festival, but, you know, I was down through there a little more than 3 weeks ago, and the lady, I talked to a lady standing on the side of the road. They were working in one of the peanut fields, and she, you know, I said, when do you harvest these things? She said, well, usually towards the end of August, first of September. So here's your chance to go. You know, peanuts are a staple of South Carolina. Go down and enjoy this. It's a family-friendly event, alcohol-free, music, food, parade, and music's craft. Just a good family time, place to go, eat some boiled peanuts. There you go. Quality Deer Management Association. Got an email from them. The Lakelands branch, which is right down here in Greenwood, is having their third annual family banquet and auction. And that's going to be Friday, August the 8th, 6 o'clock. It's at the Piedmont Tech Multipurpose Building in Greenwood, South Carolina. Tickets 45, single, 75, couple. Youth 12 and under 10, youth 13, 17 is $15. Like I said, I was just down at the convention. Seems like a really good organization. In fact, I sat at the dinner yesterday they had and had the auction in conjunction with it. I sat with Carmen Biedenbaugh, who is the contact for that chapter. His email address, he said he'd rather have an email than anything else. It's K-A-R-M-A-N. That's Carmen Biedenbaugh. It's BedenBaugh@gmail.com. If you didn't get that, you can go to the QDMA website, and they have lists of all their banquets and that sort of thing. Ran across this one, just thought it'd be fun. Second annual Charleston Pirate Festival, August 10th at the Maritime Center. Hey, if you and your kids are going to be in Charleston, take them over to the Maritime Center. That's Wharfside Street in Charleston. You know, learn about pirates, colonial maritime history in a family environment. All ages welcome. I couldn't pass that one up. If I was down there, I might go to it myself. The National Wild Turkey Federation. Now, this one is actually not in South Carolina this year, but it was interesting because they had a footnote next year will be. They have a sporting clay shoot at the Meadows National Gun Club in Forsyth, Georgia. Draws more than 500 participants. It is a sanctioned shoot. And I was looking at a 5-stand event with sub-gauges 20, 28, 410, all sorts of wobble clays, and it's open to the public. If you want to go down and shoot, you can shoot. It's a small fee, 3-stand make a break wobble traps. Next year, it will take place at the National Wild Turkey Federation's state-of-the-art shooting facility in Edgefield, South Carolina. So if you don't make this one this year, you can check out more at it, iclays.com. Next year's going to be right here in South Carolina. Man, I used to remember when I shot sporting clays, how much fun we always had. This sounds like a good event. Got just a couple more. There's the break, and I'll see you on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I've just got three items from one event that I want to go over before we get done with the calendar for this week. You know, the FLW Cup is coming to Columbia, August 16th, 17th. And there are three concerts that are going to be as part of the convention center goings on. There are three concerts. The first one is, Saturday, August 16th. It's Jeremy McComb. Says it brings a lot of energy to the stage, and he just released his newest single, Love Song. On Sunday, August 17th, the John Wesley Satterfield Band will perform from 2 to 3 on the convention stage. Wesley has his roots in Columbia as a South Carolina Gamecocks alumnus and more than 20 years of experience in the music industry. Blends country and rock in his playlist. And then the big one is going to be Rodney Atkins on August the 17th, 4 p.m. Now, this will be right before the final weigh-in. And he's got some good songs, two of them I really like, Cleaning This Gun. If you're a dad and you've heard that song, you like it too. And then Take a Back Road. If you listen to this show, you know I like back roads too. So that's three concerts in association with the FLW Cup coming here to Columbia the end of August. I'm going to have another segment next week leading up to the Cup itself, and then I'll be there for a lot of the action too. So those calendar events items will go on the Facebook and website here in the next couple of days. Hope you'll check them out. If you go to and do some of these things, let me know. Just shoot me a message. Send me a message. Shoot me an email. The email is roger@woodsandwatersc.com. And let me know, because it helps me figure out what people like to do. Okay. I went down to the Quality Deer Management Association convention down in Athens, Georgia this week. And it's hard to believe that deer season is only like, 3 weeks away for a lot of people in the low country. A month away for most of the rest of us if you do primitive weapon, archery, muzzleloading, that sort of thing. And while the iron was hot, I figured I'd spend a day and we'll do a little bit of deer hunting prep. Some of the things I learned while I was down there, some of the seminars, one of them was really neat. I think it's applicable all over South Carolina because we have this nasty tree called the sweet gum. And this seminar it actually made the sweet gum almost a useful tree. But before I get started with that, we need to give a special congratulations to one of our own SCDNR officers. Each year, the Quality Deer Management Association recognizes a Wildlife Officer of the Year. And this year, Sergeant Eddie Montz was recognized for his work in the Take One, Make One program here in South Carolina. He is the Take One, Make One coordinator. And it just so happens I called Columbia because I wanted to have him on the show to talk about Take One, Make One. I was in a seminar. I got a phone call from Columbia on Thursday and said, actually, if you're at Athens, then some of our people are there, and the guy you need to talk to is actually there. And probably 10 minutes later, I ran into them in the hallway. So I spent some time with Eddie, his family, some of the other DNR and South Carolina folks yesterday, and Eddie will be on the show with us to talk about Take One, Make One program, how you can get involved, how you can get a kid involved. Eddie is also involved in the Lakelands branch, the QDMA fundraiser I just talked about. So if you go to the fundraiser down in Greenwood, be sure to tell him thanks for his work. He works with the Rack Pack down there, which is the Quality Deer Management Kids Program. Thank him for his work with the next generation of outdoorsmen. I had a good time with him. It's always nice to see people from home when you're away from home. Now, cool weather this coming couple of weeks. Deer season just around the corner. You know, could be time to go down to the hunt club and get some work done. And at these conventions, it's always a mix of what you get. Let me run through the seminars. Hemorrhagic disease. Now, we haven't had any run-ins with that down here, but up in the Midwest, Ohio, down to Missouri, you know, they have had a horrific time with hemorrhagic diseases. Buck excursion, making sense of the movements. I went to that one. It's kind of one of those things, well, we don't know exactly what's happening yet because we don't have enough data, but they had tags and bucks and, you know, what time of the year they were moving outside their home range and that sort of thing. Interactive aging on the hoof was really funny. Kip Adams and Joe Hamilton, what you had was you had just a series of slides. I think there were 12 of them, and we each had a little counter in our hands, and we could guess the age, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and above. And that was fun. And they make a point of doing some things like that to make a otherwise, you know, really scientific convention enjoyable. Whitetail Ramblings was really good. They had a panel up there, four guys, and they got into a lot of details that just were over my head, but a lot of it was really useful. In fact, one of the things that we came out of there is if you have coyotes, that 30% of whatever coyotes you have are just loners. They just move around and don't have any home range. And I said, well, maybe that's why I don't always have coyotes, and sometimes I do have coyotes. Maybe they're just, I'm just in an area where we don't have any real packs that stay home. We just have a bunch of roamers. They had a tour of the UGA Deer Lab. I did not get to go to that. They had a wildlife photography and videography class that I really wanted to go to, but I knew this other one would benefit probably the audience more. They had a bow tuning and shooting tips, food plot equipment, advanced stand placement safety. That was a good one. That was Justin Thayer. And boy, I tell you, when he starts talking about safety restraints and tree stands and that sort of thing, you realize probably during your life, you've been more lucky than anything because of so much that could happen in a tree stand. So, and I'm going to try to get Justin on. He works with the Tree Stand Manufacturers Association. Really good guy. Lives out of Louisiana. I'm going to try to get him on to talk a little bit before season starts about just basic safety and some of the things you and I just, we don't think about all the time. Patterning mature bucks throughout the season. I came home early because I was tired. I didn't get to hear that one. Hunting pressure and buck movements. And one of the things that came out of the little panel discussion is those deer really, even though you hunt them and pressure them, they don't move out of their home range. They may get very nocturnal, but most just simple hunting pressure does not move them from their home range. That was one of those little tidbits that just dropped out, and I said, well, there you go. There's an answer. And those were from a biologist from Tennessee, and Grant Woods both agreed on that one. Deer vocalization, and some of these were on Saturday. And they also had the, which I really would have liked to have been, the Outdoorsman Challenge Hunter Games was Saturday. That would be a, if you think you're a good outdoorsman, that might be one you need to check into if you go to any one of these QDMA conventions. Next year, it's going to be in Louisville, Kentucky. Really want to go. They're going to have a, they had a convention back in March to address deer issues with deer hunting and deer populations, that sort of thing. And they're going to combine those next time in Louisville. So we'll see what happens. But anyway, the issue I want to talk about today is hinge cutting. Now, if anybody out there listening has had any experience with hinge cutting, please give me a call at the show and let me know what your experience has been. Like I said, hinge cutting, when you look at it, I mean, how many of you have ever seen a sweet gum tree growing horizontal after being literally crushed by another tree? I mean, we've all seen it, and we've all taken those chainsaws and bush axes and gone after those sweet gum trees because they're an obnoxious tree that just get in the way. But hinge cutting could possibly resurrect the usefulness of a sweet gum tree. Dr. Jim Brocker is the man. He's from Michigan. He's taught the seminar. You can find out a lot more information than what I'm going to tell you today on his website, which is extremedeerhabitat.com. It's also hingecut.com. He has a YouTube channel. And he said, this is managing your land with a chainsaw. And he does. And it's really neat. And I expect the same thing. This is geared towards deer hunting. I expect if you took everything I'm going to talk about here and lower it to 2 feet instead of 4 to 5 feet, you could do the same thing with rabbits, quail, anything that needs overhead cover from predators. And you wouldn't think deer need overhead predator cover protection, but it gives them a sense of safety. They don't have to look another direction. Now, instead of looking up, you know, for danger, now all they have to do is look sideways. So anyway, here are some of the basics. And like I said, there's a lot more information out here, but I thought this might be good because I asked him a question. I said, now, so I'm from South Carolina. We're, you know, a few weeks out from our season starting in the low country. We're 6 weeks from really starting here in the upstate. Can we still do this now? He said, absolutely. He said, until bucks especially get hard antlers, they're not going to get, you're not going to run them out. So we got a little bit of time here. This could be something that you might want to, with the weather next week, take advantage of. But here it goes. Get a plan first. Get a map of your property. Take into account creeks, roadbeds, any prominent topographic feature before you start cutting and making these areas, because you want to use those to your advantage. Don't put these in those old roadbeds or along those creeks and that sort of thing. With wind direction, you need to map it out. And he gives you a lot more instructions on how to map it out. And actually, you can get a free, read the first chapter of his book for free if you go to his website right now. Wind is important. You know, what's the regular wind? But he said, you know, not all the time do you want to set up for the regular wind. Sometimes you want to set up for one of those north winds that get the deer up and moving. Something else to consider. This is wide open for interpretation here. But you're trying to provide that top core cover. And, of course, you want to do this in conjunction with food plots, stand locations, and most of hinge cutting is focused on doe groups, because we all know the does bring the bucks with them. First thing you want to do is identify an anchor tree, and that's the first tree you cut. And you want that tree to be an area where you can gray out the view towards your stand in the food plots. That means you can get to the stand without them seeing it. And you want to make sure that it's fairly open around it where the deer are comfortable laying in there and seeing. And what you're trying to do is you're really trying to get these deer to, instead of going into the clear cuts and that sort of thing, you want them to use those open hardwoods, which is where this comes in. Clean out underneath the area you want to cover. You know, get rid of sticks, rocks, roots. Imagine you're making a primitive bed for yourself, and that's how debris-free it needs to be. The big issue with this is make all your cuts flat. No angles. You want to make them flat. Don't use a bush axe to do this. You want a handsaw, a chainsaw, and you're cutting maybe a third of the way through to half the way through. You want to make those cuts 4 to 5 feet off the ground. In other words, you want the deer to be able to get in there, lay down, stand up, and escape without hitting the canopy. In other words, all the trees that you lay down, you want them to be easy access and easy escape. There's a lot more here. We use the next segment to go through some more of that stuff. This could be something you want to do. Stay tuned, and I'll see you on the other side of the break. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We are talking a little bit about hinge cutting, so let's get right back to it. Again, the first step, you want to identify the anchor tree, and that needs to be a little bigger tree. You know, we're talking maybe 4 or 5 inches in diameter, and that tree can actually die. I asked him, I said, you know, we have a lot of pine trees around here. Now, of course, some of you can cut your pine trees and some of you can't. I'm not going to say whether I can cut mine because Dad's probably listening and he wouldn't want to know if I'm going to cut down his pine trees to make a bedding area. So that tree can actually die, but it's the ones that you layer on top of that that you really want to maintain, you know, all the leaves and actually get it, keep it living. So flat cuts 4 to 5 feet above the ground, short cuts. If you're using a handsaw, when they did a demo and they cut a sweet gum, you know, it was maybe two or three little short little things, and they weren't more than about a third of the way through that tree, and they actually had some tools that they reached up and grabbed the tree up high and pulled it the direction they want to. They say those tools, you can either push with the tool or pull with it in case the tree is not leaning the right way. And you want the shortcuts so you don't cut it through because you want it to live, but you don't want the tree to fall on its own. You want it to land softly. In fact, most of the time he said you won't have to pull that tree over. So you have to experiment with how far you need to get through the tree depending on the size of the tree. And of course they had the first tree, and this is where planting comes in, because you need to have that anchor tree, but you also need to have enough small trees around it where you can actually lay the cover over top. So, you know, you want to cut and you're not going to have a perfect circle, but you're going to lay all those tops inward. For the bedding area. Make the area big enough for 10 to 12 deer. He said usually the groups, you know, he likes to have will be 7 or 8 deer, and you want to give them enough room to spread out. He said, really, if you had any dough groups bigger than 7 to 8, you needed to thin those out. He said, dough groups are visual. They like to see each other when they're bedded down, which makes sense. I mentioned gray out areas. He liked the gray out areas, which means, you know, piling limbs, old logs, or brush up on one side of those bedding areas so the deer can't see that direction. And they'll naturally lie down looking the other because they feel safe and protected from the other, from the gray side. But the gray side needs to be between you and the deer. And what that does is allows you to get into your stand without the deer seeing you. Because face it, in most of our open woods around here, deer can see a long way. Buck bedding areas are much smaller. 3 or 4 trees, still the same thing. You want an anchor tree, a couple trees over top of that. Clean out from under it. Make it just big enough for 1 or 2 deer so he doesn't have to lay in the same spot all the time. Here's a good one. You want to put your buck bedding areas downwind of the doe areas. Now, that's if you're a deer hunter, you know why, because you want him to be downwind of those does. And all of this hinge cutting is for the rut. That's when it's really going to come into play. So you're looking anytime you're planning this, because, you know, of course, when December gets here, the leaves are going to be gone. This bedding area is going to be useless anyway. But you're looking for that period, you know, pre-rut, rut, and then post-rut. That's when you're looking at hunting these areas. Make a separate path for each doe group. In other words, if you and they were working with 25 acres at the QDMA facility there. And he said most of his areas average 50 acres. His largest is 300. He's been doing this a long time. He's a biologist by trade, not a wildlife biologist, a doctor biologist. And you lay out several of these areas and give each one of them a trail to your food plots. He said there's always a dominant doe group in any given area. And he said if you give them one trail to get to your food plot, he said the dominant group will hit that trail first. They'll come into the field and they'll keep the other groups from ever entering the field. And he said, you want all those groups in that field. That brings the Mr. Buck out with them. So he said, give each one of these bedding areas, you want a trail that will get them to the food plots. And if you've ever been on a big field, you notice how there's groups here and groups there and all, and they just avoid each other. And if they can't avoid each other, that's when you get the does standing up on their hind legs, kicking each other and that sort of thing. That's the dominance and hierarchy of deer. Let's see. He started off this whole thing. He said, I'm concentrating here on evening deer movement. He said morning is a lot more complicated. He said, but evening deer movement is run by fawns and button bucks. If you've deer hunted much, you know what I'm talking about. The evening's the first ones to come out of the small deer. He said, they're hungry after staying bedded all day and they want to eat. And they get up and move and mom gets up and moves and then, you know, it goes from there. He said to set your stands at dead-end trails to avoid deer walking the same paths you do, which makes sense. Even if you're on a main trail, you know, cut off and dead-end it. He said, there again, use your hinge cutting. He said, at the end, when you get to your tree, hinge cut a few trees where the deer get to the end of that, and there's no real easy way for them to use the trail. They learn within a couple of days. He said, you'll never see them on that trail again. Hinge cut barriers between the bedding area, trails, and your stand locations. And that keeps them from getting too close to your stand. Oh, let's see. What else did he say? He went so far as to create trails between these bedding areas by hinge cutting trees 1 to 2 feet above the ground to make it more difficult for the deer to walk a path that they would normally walk or whatever. One thing he did say that needs to be brought up as far as maintenance, he said you need to, in the summertime, you need to check them often, 3-4 times. Because once there's any debris on the ground in these bedding areas, they'll quit using it. Tree limbs fall down or that sort of thing. And then again, there's always a chance your trees could die. You need to go in there and either make a whole new one or add to the one you have. Now, I'll admit it was hard for me to listen to a lot of it because I like to sit in places I can see a long way and that are pretty to look at. And hey, I probably don't see as many deer or whatever that I could if I was a better deer hunter or didn't look at things from my point of view as from the deer's point of view. But the thought of looking at a bunch of horizontal sweet gum trees just, it just does not get me excited. But if you have a small tract of land, and we hunt some small tracts of land, providing these bedding areas, you know, along with food plots and travel routes, will help keep the deer and not work in between several tracts of land to get the bedding and feeding areas. You've often heard the guy say, well, I only have a small area to hunt, and I feel like if I let a yearling walk that the neighbor's just going to get him and that sort of thing. And we've all dealt with that. But, you know, hey, this could be one of those things that will help you keep those deer right there where you want them to be. So I hope that helps. I hope somebody will come out and try it. I'm going to try it this week. This week or next week, I'm going to get out. I've got a couple of areas in mind that I can do at least one of these if I have time, two if I'd like to, and just see. And it might take a couple of years for you to really see any kind of change in the deer movement or that sort of thing. But, you know, every little bit helps. And, hey, if nothing else, you get those sweet gum trees down where you can really work on them in 2 years with a chainsaw. I went to several other seminars, and I'll cover some of those later on. I wanted to go on to this National Deer Alliance that they launched. In March, they had a meeting of 200 individuals there at the headquarters, and they were from all areas of deer management, wildlife services, and that sort of thing. And it was interesting. They gave us a handout and had a graph on it. And it said the graph was percentage of hunters affiliated with a national species conservation organization. Now, that's the big five, I guess, deer, turkey, duck, pheasant, elk, were the examples they gave. There are over 11 million deer hunters. Less than 1% of them belong to a deer hunting organization. QDMA has a membership of about 55,000. They want 75,000 by the end of the year. Whereas there are about 3 million turkey hunters, 8% of them belong to the National Wild Turkey Federation probably. Duck hunters, 1.5 million of them, 41% of them are members of probably Ducks Unlimited or Delta Waterfowl, one of the two. Pheasant hunters, about the same, 9%. Elk hunters, about 800,000. 24% of them belong to a conservation organization. So, and there were some issues that are going on, you know, hemorrhagic diseases, hard winters. We know here in South Carolina, the coyote population has exploded over the last few years. Our deer numbers have taken a downturn. And they said, you know, look, there's no real umbrella organization to handle these issues. There's no NRA for deer hunters. So they decided to organize this, get this off. It is free. It's not a membership dues thing. It's free. The only thing you need to do is go to their website, National Deer Alliance. It's an email sign up. And the only thing they're going to send you is a weekly email. It's going to tell you, here's what's going on with deer hunting. Here's something that's going on at a state level, a federal level. On the state level stuff, we need you to contact your representative, or we need a volunteers to do this. I went and did it. It says, welcome to National Deer Alliance. We're happy to have you as a member of our community. Your email address and interest preferences have been recorded in our database. In the future, you'll receive weekly emails from NDA about all things whitetail deer related. Privacy is important to us, therefore we will not sell, rent, or give your name or address to anyone. At any point, you can select the link at the bottom of every email to unsubscribe or to receive less or more information. Thanks for registering. Questions, comments, feel free to contact us. So it's free, and anytime you don't want to do it, you can unsubscribe. I do have a little more information on them that I'll go through in the next segment. Hear the music in the background, so hang on with me, and I'll go through a little bit more on the other side. Never you come around. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I'm going to spend a few more minutes on the National Deer Alliance and then move on to some news events in the last segment. Alliances exist in many forms for many reasons. They exist for the purpose of wildlife conservation. They exist for habitat loss and enhancement. They even exist to drive legislation, but until now, there has never been one widespread enough that it joined the majority of hunters and wildlife enthusiasts in North America under one umbrella. Following the Whitetail Summit, hosted by QDMA in March of 2014, a clear need was exposed for the formation of a unified voice of the modern deer hunter, and we have the NDA. Why is the NDA necessary? Deer the most commonly pursued and economically important big game animal in America. However, less than 1% of deer hunters are involved in an organization, and they have a statistic here that deer hunting drives the financial side of the wildlife management in the United States, generating nearly half of the entire $87 billion hunting industry. In fact, agency budgets and federally apportioned funding are critically dependent on deer hunters. NDA's mission is clear: to unite deer hunters like never before and harness this power to achieve positive outcomes for deer and deer hunting. In many respects, whitetail hunters and managers have become complacent following decades of herd growth and good times. Perhaps this explains why deer hunters are the most fragmented of all hunting groups. Regardless, the Whitetail Summit clearly revealed that more challenges face deer hunting and management today than at any time in recent history. And that's why you have the NDA. So, anyway, it's free. It's an email sign-up. Give it a try. If you don't like it, unsubscribe and keep rolling. QDML also has what's called the Rack Pack, which is their kids organization. I hope to have the director of that come on the show with us and explain a little bit more about what the Rack Pack is. And this show is dedicated to getting the next generation of hunters, fishermen, campers, hikers, whatever, outside. So I hope you enjoyed the little bit of deer hunting. And hunting season's coming up, but at the same time hunting season gets here, the fishing gets great. The weather cools off. The hiking, camping gets, so fall is going to be a busy time on this show. I was looking at August last night, and August is going to be really busy with lots of good information. So let's, but that'll come later. Let's look at some news. The Cystic Fibrosis Redbone Tournament update. If you listened in last week, I'm trying to raise money with Cystic Fibrosis to sponsor a boat in the Redbone Trout Tournament in Charleston. Hit a few bumps in the road when I talked to them this week. I'm trying to find a fix on my own, but it's a matter of time and money, which is a good thing for them. Those boats are being sponsored faster than she thought it were going to be. And this is not about Woods and Water. This is about Cystic Fibrosis. And the way the money gets to them, so it's almost going to have to be a raffle and not a direct contribution to CF. They don't really have a way to track the contributions. So I guess what I'm asking you to do, if you're interested in sponsoring or being a part of sponsoring a boat in the CF tournament in Charleston, I need to hear from you. I don't have but a couple of weeks to get this all put together. I'm trying to find a way to go about it and just pay the whole $2,500 and then give us a couple more months to raise the money. If you're interested, send me an email, roger@woodsandwatersc.com. That's Roger at Woods and Water, and there's no ampersand. That's an A-N-D in the email address. Send it to me and let me know if you're interested. In the meantime, I'm going to be working as hard as I can to make this happen because I think it's not only a good thing for cystic fibrosis to get some exposure in this part of the state, but it's a great weekend. And if you've never saltwater fished or you have a kid that would like to go saltwater fishing, these are going to be some of the best guides, the best company, the best meals, and some of the best prizes that you'll find in any fishing tournament. So, that being said, I'll have some more. I'll put some Facebook and that sort of things as things come through. There's another app out there. This one's from the South Carolina Sportsman. It's a free app, of course. It's divided up hunting and fishing. It's got moon phases, doe day listings, best times to hunt, even ammunition ballistics info in case you need that out in the field. Fishing side, it's got the reef locators, South Carolina buoy, GPS coordinates, local radar, tide tables, boat ramp directions, South Carolina Scenic River information. I haven't looked at it yet, but it looks like something you might could use. It looks like it's even got almost an exact copy of the DNR regulations with game zones and all, which might be nice because you know how many times I've been duck hunting and gotten out in the blind going, now what was shooting time again? Because, you know, you have to add minutes and subtract minutes depending on where you are across the state. And you had to go to the internet, and internet connection from a duck blind is not the best. So this app might be a good thing for me. Keep me from panicking at 6 o'clock in the morning. DNR News, we've got another, Hunter Ed volunteer recognized for education efforts. Jack Truesdale of Lugolf was one of the first two instructors recognized. He's 8 years as a volunteer hunter education instructor for the DNR. During the past year, Jack taught hunter education over 7 counties with travel times to teach totaling over 200 hours for the year. He was the volunteer hunter education instructor of the year by the DNR. And like I said, with along with Eddie Montz, we appreciate more than they know their efforts to get the next generation involved in hunting. And this was too good to pass up too. Have you heard about Shooter's Grill out in Rifle, Colorado? I know that's kind of a far piece from Greenville, South Carolina. But there's a grill in Rifle, Colorado where the waitresses pack heat. And that's one you don't complain about your service, I'm sure. If you don't know where Rifle, Colorado is, I've been through it 3 or 4 times. It's about 180 miles west of Denver. And they say they embrace the firearms theme with menus like the M16 burrito, Smith & Wesson grilled cheese, and locked and loaded nachos. The salt and pepper shakers are made from shotgun shells. But the biggest Second Amendment statement is the guns the waitresses carry. And it's, the owner says, no one has ever turned around and walked out because they saw a gun. The owner is a girl, Lauren Babert. Started the trend when she began carrying a pistol shortly after opening the restaurant a year ago. She said, I started carrying because I was scared of being a woman in business and the early mornings and late nights I would be there. The accessorizing caught on with the staff. Open carry is legal in Colorado. She said, customers don't feel threatened by their servers carrying guns. No one has ever turned around because they saw one. They might have left because it was too crowded. Praise the Lord, but not over the guns. So if you get out to Rifle, Colorado, stop in, get you a burger, and figure out how the surface is. Oh, and if you're in Oshkosh, Wisconsin this week, you can go to the Experimental Aircraft Association fly-in. I think I've been up there 12 times. Great place. Boy, I tell you, that's a lot of airplanes. Here's one for you. Georgia tournament anglers bought winning bass from recreational fishermen. And down in Georgia, you got two anglers fishing a bass tournament. They were approached by a couple of other people out fishing who needed a scale. They had caught a big bass, didn't have a scale, wanted to know how big it was. And it weighed 11 and a half pounds, so the two anglers decided they wanted to buy it from these two and enter it in the tournament. They won a total of $305 with their ill-gotten fish, but they got caught. And they got citations for illegally buying fish, and even the people that sold the fish got caught too, got a citation. So sometimes cheating never pays. Boy, and we've got a lot of tournaments going on here this summer in South Carolina. Let's hope we don't have any of those type incidents from our boys. I was surfing the other day and came across this website, and I think the website is Nature Rocks, but it's titled Nature, just what the doctor ordered. And it kind of addresses what a lot of families run into these days. It's, you know, one generation grew up outside, the next one didn't, and the third one has no chance. But she said she regrets that today's kids learn from their parents to be scared of nature, scared of ticks, jellyfish, or broken arm. Kids find nature in itself to be an obstacle to getting outside. I'm too scared of nature sometimes. I'm guilty of listening to the stories of one in a million accidents and giving irrational fears. And that's a danger of living in a technological age. And news is everywhere around us. You know, Lyme's disease. Well, what if one of my daughters gets Lyme's disease? Well, you know, it's something you deal with. Drowning. But then I realized no one discusses the successes. Getting up the mountain or through the rapids is not news. But in truth, the risk of a freak accident is by definition minuscule, and the benefits of persevering are enormous. Being outside provides a sense of accomplishment no matter what you're doing, hiking, looking for bugs, kayaking, and it offers real benefits that far outweigh the risks. Excuse me. Parents and grandparents have intuitively known about these benefits for years. Now the medical community is getting behind them also. The Massachusetts General Hospital has just teamed up with Appalachian Mountain Club in Boston to prescribe nature as a way to improve wellness. National parks have always been loved for their symbolism and scenery, but we want to increase the awareness of their role in preventative medicine and therapy. So, hey, when the doctors get behind us, maybe we've got a chance. You know, nature's our playground. I'm learning every day how nature helps my daughter develop holistically. She gets mental and physical benefits from the outdoors that I know will contribute to her success in life. Good point. And I think I touched on this a couple weeks ago. Beretta is locating from Maryland to Tennessee, another gun company that's fleeing the gun-controlled North and coming to the gun-friendly South. So another win for the South in that one. All right, well, that's getting close. I've enjoyed the hour. I hope you have. Like I said, things in August are going to get busy. We're going to have a lot of people on the air with me, reaching a lot of different subjects, so stay with me. Chuck Norris for this week. It's a good one. If you go in and spell Chuck Norris wrong on Google, it doesn't say, did you mean Chuck Norris? It simply replies, run while you have the chance. And I tried to tell last week, and I ran out of time, but did you know that Google Maps, at least on my iPhone, has a option to avoid highways? So it's real easy when you go into Google and type in, I want to go so-and-so, to swipe it and say, I want to avoid highways, and it will give you the back roads that you need to travel to get to where you're going anyway. So take it for what it's worth, but boy, there's a lot more to see on those back roads than there is anywhere else. I took a lot of back roads going to Athens. Here's James. It's all for Saturday, Woods and Water, South Carolina. Take advantage of this cooler weather of the week. Be careful while you're out there. Use that avoid highways options. Travel the back roads. Don't forget the camera. I'll see you next week, same time. Have a good one. My mind.